Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. The State Library of Ohio appointed a new state librarian back in October of last year. With more than 20 years of library experience in public and academic libraries, she's ready to shape the future of Ohio libraries. Joining us now is Mandy Knapp, the State Librarian of Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Mandy.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to be here. Gosh, 20 years.
I date you. Yeah. 20 years goes by in a blink and it's still. Yes. I want to say congratulations on being the state librarian. Can you tell us how it felt when you got the news that you had this appointment?
Oh, absolutely. You know, wonderful. It's so exciting. It's also, you know, any leadership task like this is, it can be daunting, right? You know, so much responsibility to the great people of Ohio and to the information that, you know, to share that great information of our state with everyone. So.
Well, and it's well known that Ohioans love their libraries. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But can you first tell us, for those who aren't familiar, what is a state librarian? What does your role involve?
Sure. No, that's a great question because there's oftentimes a lot of confusion. So the state library is one of the oldest government agencies. We were formed in 1817. And so the first state librarian, all that person did was he looked after the 500 books that were originally purchased to educate legislators. At that time, you know, it was still very much a new state, up and coming. So that's what the first state librarian did. But as time has gone on over that 200 years, we now do a variety of things. So we still have a research library here in Columbus of government information, but we also provide grants and services to other libraries of all types. So public libraries, school libraries, academic libraries, and then we're also a strong partner in the Ohio Library for the Blind and print disabled. So this, I as state librarian, you know, kind of manage all those projects with the team here. You know, so a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of exciting things happening all at the same time.
You have a little more to do than just watch over 500 books.
I mean, a little bit, a tad. I mean, that would be the dream, just to have 500 books
and sit and read them all day.
Track. Yeah. But no, we have over a million items here in our research library of government information. So we got one or two things going on.
Yeah. Now, going back to the start of your career, did you always want a career in library services? Did you always want to be a librarian?
No, that's a lovely question. So I was one of those smart kids who was like, you know, Mandy, you should go to college. And I was like, all right, I'll go to college. But I didn't really know what direction to go in. But when I was a freshman at Otterbein University, I got a job working in Courtright Memorial. And I just fell in love. I was like, this is where I want to be, you know, because the focus was always on helping people find information, helping students there really grow those skills to really blossom and embrace knowledge. And I was like, yes, this is what I want. You know, and I took a year off between undergraduate and going to graduate school for library science to kind of think about that question. But I was like, nope. Libraries are it for me. That's what I want.
And you've worked in different kinds of libraries, too. Can you tell me a few of the different types of libraries you've been involved with?
Oh, sure. I've worked for a library consortium in Pittsburgh called the Allegheny County Library Association. I worked for the state library previous to being the state librarian. I worked for Worthington Public Library. I worked for Westerville Public Library. And I worked for another government agency called the Ohio Public Library Information Network that supplies internet services to public libraries. And I've worked for Carnegie Mellon University briefly. And of course, as I mentioned, I work for Otterbein's Courtright Memorial.
Now, we can't talk to the state librarian without talking about funding. There have
Sure.
been issues with funding at both the state and federal level. So let's start with federal. Even though it is the State Library of Ohio, you do rely on some federal funding. What is it used for?
Excellent question. So we received $5.4 million from the federal government, and that money is all goes to providing services for public libraries so that they can better serve the public. So some projects we do it with that is we have a project called the Ohio Digital Library, and if you have a Westerville or Delaware County library card, I'm sure you're very familiar with that. So we pay like the platform fee for that service, and then we pay a staff person with those federal funds to help coordinate the purchasing of items. We also do to small and rural libraries a service called the Serving Every Ohioan Consortium. So what that does, when you go to the library's website and you type in like, I want a cookbook, that software is what we run through that service. And then we also do competitive grants. And, I'm so excited we were talking about the arts today because actually the theme of our collaborative summer reading program that we use for with these federal funds is called Color Our World. It's all about artists and artistry and art making. So we do competitive grants that libraries apply for. And so we have three here in the Greater Columbus area that have received grants, but I think there's 51 statewide that received a summer reading grant to do, art-related programs to increase that enjoyment of literature.
Now I
And then we
know.
have a variety of other kind of cool grants and stuff.
Now I know a lot of things with federal funding are in flux. We're not really sure. But your $5 million that you mentioned, is it still there at the moment, the federal funding?
As far as I know, so we have we're fine for now. We have received from our federal funding agency, which is the Institute of Museum and Library Services, a partial award, a 50% award for the next federal fiscal year, and we have reassurances that we will receive the other half. So we have every reason to be cautiously optimistic at this time, but it's going to be, we'll have to see what happens with the next budget bill. Of course, for many years, most people are not familiar with Institute of Museum and Library Services, and that is, I think, generally because we are not particularly controversial. It's not one of these hot button issues. We're a service that most Americans can really kind of get behind. We do things like summer reading grants or supporting like basic services for libraries with this funding. So we don't often make the news. So one of the things we're monitoring closely is the congressional budget and seeing what happens with our funding at that level. But any loss of that funding would be devastating to the state library, as all these services, the summer reading grants that I mentioned, the support for online collections, that's all funded through federal dollars.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich, and we're talking with Mandy Knapp, the new State Librarian of Ohio. And let's talk about state funding too. Lawmakers were going to change the way that the state funded libraries, but there was a big public outcry, so that's been walked back a bit in the current budget. Do you feel more secure about state funding right now, even though the budget hasn't been finalized?
For the state library, we're funded separately than the public libraries because we do have a library that's open to the public, but it's a research library, not a public library as, defined under the law. But our funding, I do feel cautiously optimistic about, as your listeners can research at the state library or elsewhere if they so choose. I did ask for some more funding. I think we'll just have to wait and see on that, but I do feel very optimistic. Ohioans love their libraries. Whenever I go out and visit, public libraries, I hear such heartwarming, beautiful stories about people using the library, changing their lives through library services. For example, I was at our last board meeting. The director of Pike County Library came, and we do a grant called Guiding Ohio Online that puts a technology trainer in rural public libraries. And their stories, Amy, would like grow your heart like five times. They talked about they took their technology trainer to like a senior living facility, and there was a gentleman there who his dream, was he wrote several novels, but he wrote them all like longhand because he didn't really know how to use a computer. But through working with our trainer, he was able to not only type all those up, but get them correctly formatted f to be published. He sent them to a small publisher. I think it was like Kindle or one of those Amazon services. And now he has. Like they brought three actual books that he was able to create by using those services. So that,
That's
I don't know.
amazing.
But
Yeah,
yeah.
I was gonna ask you about the Guiding Ohio Online program because it's the idea of it not only teaching people how to create their own book, but I mean it just goes down to the fact of rural libraries are the key. If you don't have internet at your house, or
Right.
you're not sure, even if you're not sure how to do something on your smartphone, there's a librarian who can help you with that.
Yes, absolutely. And I love this program. It's so near to my heart. Right now we're just in rural libraries. But this kind of need is everywhere. I was just talking to a librarian at a community college, and she was talking about how she's had to start talking about AI with her students because they're afraid of it. Like they're 18, 19 years old, and she has to, she creates lesson plans that are like, AI is a tool. Here's some ways to use it responsibly. Here's what it means. So that's, I mean, libraries are developing and changing with the times, but for the Guiding Ohio Online program that you mentioned specifically. Yes, that's a rural-based program because when we looked at the need was highest in our rural areas because, that internet connection has been slowest to reach some of the more remote parts of the state. But they've done such amazing things. There's that one, and we hear all the time stories of, Grandma really wants to connect with her grandkids who live in another state, but she doesn't know how to use a computer, so she can't FaceTime with them. But she, goes and learns the technology, and now she's able to connect, with her grandkids. And then she takes that same knowledge that she learned how to connect with, this person online, and she can apply it to different areas of her life through telehealth, telemedicine. So these skills we start, and they're definitely transferable.
Yeah, and in your career, it seems that you have definitely put an emphasis on the digital aspects of libraries. The library system has changed over the past 20 years. So, how have you seen those changes, and how have you seen the need for libraries to adapt to serve more people?
Wonderful question. Yes, when I started, now a shocking 20 years ago, it was m still mostly paper-based, right? We would get like everything in print, and ebooks were sort of this idea, this like dream that we had of what could be. And then in 2012, when I started at State Library the first time, I coordinated the ebook service. So I coordinated the purchasing of all the ebooks. And that was the year I feel like ebooks really started to explode because new devices came in the market, new demands. So since that time, since 2012, our usage of ebooks statewide has just, it's just off the charts. They sent me a graph and the graph just goes straight up. I know we're on radio, but I'm just pointing straight up. It's like, woo! So, I think what's hard right now is we've had all this excitement, all this growth in digital materials. And sometimes I have this perception, especially with younger people that I hear, that everything is online. And you know what? Honestly, I wish that were true, but we like, there's so many gems here at State Library, at other institutions, like these amazing historical documents that we just don't have enough funding to digitize, to put online, to make them shareable. Like you wouldn't believe like the amazing stuff that's out there. Right now we're doing like a preservation grant for institutions so they can just keep these like precious historic materials like safe for the time and not as they try to find money later to digitize them.
Now, you have been in your role for a few months now. What's your favorite part of being the newest state librarian of Ohio?
My favorite part is I love going out and meeting Ohioans, seeing the different libraries, you know, connecting with people and hearing their stories. It really means so much. Like, you know, I think sometimes, you know, when you're in one of these statewide organizations, like it's hard, right? Because they do need guidance here at the office. You know, I do manage people, I have to lead the organization, but I also, it's very important to me to make time to hear from people where they are and what is going on, you know, in small towns and medium-sized cities and larger cities, and not just here in Columbus. So yesterday and the day before that, I was on the road. So on Tuesday, I was at like Findlay, and I went to Hardin County and I went to Bowling Green. And then yesterday I went to Hudson and I was in Stark County. And then I was also, what it was really close to Cuyahoga Valley National Forest or
National
National
Park. Yeah.
Park, but I went to a high school library up that way.
Well, continue to enjoy your travels around the state. That was Mandy Knapp, the new state librarian of Ohio. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk to the founder of an art studio that looks to include everyone in art making. That's When All Sides and Fascinating Ohio continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. An Ohio studio is looking to create a more inclusive community through art. Passion Works Studio offers employment opportunity for artists with and without developmental differences, and also a space where all are welcome. Joining us is Patty Mitchell, the founder and executive director of Passion Works Studio. Welcome to All Sides, Patty.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you didn't grow up in Ohio, but you moved here for college, where you attended Ohio University. What drew you to Athens and Ohio University?
Back in the day, late 50s, early 60s, my parents lived here for a couple of years. We're from New England. And as I was looking for places, my dad just thought, you know what? I think you'd like Athens. And we took a little road trip out here, and he was right. And as he always was, he's a good guy. And I fell in love with the town immediately.
Now, while you attended Ohio University, you volunteered at the Athens Mental Health Center, where you brought your art knowledge to those in the health center. What impact did that have on you and what you ended up doing as your career?
Well, I volunteered. I was coming to school as an art major, studying photography, and I volunteered up at the Mental Health Center my first year here. And then my second year, I was invited to live on ward as a resident volunteer. And so I didn't, you know, it was the 80s and there was no training, no nothing. There were four other students, four or six, and we were figuring it out. And so I was learning art practice, and I brought that up and recognized that one of the most powerful things I could do was be with another person, just draw and find connection and conversation, or just quiet. And it was profound in all the different things we tried to do. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to spend the rest of my life figuring out how to connect through the creative process with folks.
Is this where the idea for Passion Work Studio began? Is that where it incubated?
It definitely gelled there. I had a brother who was institutionalized. So and he passed when he was 12, I was 10. So as a young person, I imagined where was he? It was, you know, so my mind just flew. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I studied spaces where people were in care and went to them. And then when I came to Athens and realized that I could experience an institution, that was what drew me to it. And then as I got older and I was born into this body, he was born into his, I had so much more freedom and opportunity because I could move around, and it was just a different experience. I promised to live for the both of us. Mm-hmm. And when I would go into these spaces, I would think, is this a great space? Is this nourishing? Is this, you know, welcoming? And if it's yes, why? And if it's no, how could it be better? And so that question of how can it be better and what if we tried this have led to where we are at Passion Works now.
Yeah. Tell me the mission of Passion Work Studio.
It is to inspire and liberate the human spirit through the arts. And we do that through collaboration and upcycling and, you know, celebrating each other's gifts and working as a combined effort in this public community space where we get to respond to community opportunity in Athens and beyond.
What kind of art is created at Passion Works?
Well,
everything.
From giant puppets to miniature little products, little pins and jewelry. Mm-hmm. Studying and being in the world of developmental differences and hearing language like non-viable citizen, breaks my heart. And I'm like, what makes you viable and what makes me viable or not? And it often is to be part of the economic system. And so our artwork, we are an art first studio. We absolutely explore curiosity and work through discovery and work with really interesting found materials. And then we leverage that into product and sales so that we can be viable and be seen. I know we are.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a problem. But the artwork is our vehicle for being connected within the greater community.
How many people make art and or, I guess, work at Passion Work Studio?
We have 37 employees. And during the course of a year, we have on average 3,600 volunteers.
Wow. And are you the one managing all this, or do you have a staff that helps you?
There is a glorious grouping of staff who Tanner is in charge of volunteer coordination. A big number. We have 1,800 who help with the giant puppets at Halloween time. So all of October, we have a puppet making, costume making residency, and that's 1,800 help with that. And then we have groups come in, we give tours, everything that we've learned in our process, we want to share. Mm-hmm. So lots of tour groups. And of course, Ohio University students are coming through our studio.
Where do you get all the materials that the artists use to make all of the wide variety of things you make?
There is so much stuff out there. I know you know this to be true because we see it, but like we make passion flowers, which are our signature product, and they are upcycled newspaper printing plates, and they're aluminum, and we paint on them and delight in that process and then build these beautiful blooms. And those plates were offered to us because somebody's partner, one of the community member, said, hey, there's a lot more where this came from. Mm-hmm. And 38,000 flowers later, yes, there was a lot of metal and we've been using that material. We use Louisville Slugger bat nubs. When they make the bats, they're on a lathe, there's a little nub. We use that as a base for our wee little flowers. All kinds of fabrics and bamboo. I mean, trophies, you name it. If we can collect it, and it inspires creativity. Mm-hmm. When you look at an object and you want to give it its second life, what can it become? What can you do to this thing?
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich, and we are talking with Patty Mitchell, the founder and executive director of Passionworks Studio, an art studio for those with and without developmental differences. Now, let's talk more about these passion flowers. So you make them out of, you called them newspaper plates, is that right? And,
right.
And you said you've made 38,000 passion flowers. Do you still have more plates? Are you getting them from newspaper places around the country that don't use them anymore?
We get them right here in Athens, Ohio at the Athens Messenger.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a continuous supply?
Yep.
Oh, she just knocked on wood, everyone. Okay.
I mean, technology is great and things change. But right now we have a strong supply.
Okay. And so the passion flower, is this like your signature item? And do you sell a lot of them?
We do. We sell them nationally. So we're in Southeast Ohio at the foothills of the Appalachians. And we're in the most economic stressed zone in the state. And so when we started making products, we never imagined depending on our local economy to keep us going. We want to be available to anybody. And so we ship across the country and beyond.
And it became the official flower of Athens. What did that feel like when they decided to make it the official flower?
It felt great. We went to our mayor and asked if Athens had an official flower. And he said, no. And I was like, ooh, what about this? And he said, I don't see why not. And it went in as kind of like a wee little joke. And then it became really important to our community, that we have an art product that represents our community.
And I encourage our listeners to go to your website so you can see these pieces, these passion flowers especially. There's lots of artwork on the website, but the passion flowers come in all different sizes. And some people use them as yard decorations, or they can be in your house, right?
That's right. Centerpieces, wall art, garden, doors, porches. Yes. Awards.
And besides the passion flower, do you have any other favorite pieces of art that are sold at the studio?
It's whatever was the last thing created, typically. Mm-hmm. And we have beautiful paintings and jewelry, really funny, funky dolls, like big, wonky, kooky things. And we're in a series right now of making centerpieces out of old trophies and big giant cans for Nelsonville Music Festival. And then we make a lot of pawpaws out of fabric, and we have jewelry. Pawpaw is a native fruit.
Yeah.
It's the official native fruit of Ohio. And we have a really fabulous festival in September here in Athens County. So we're making all things pawpaw. It's kind of like the wackier and this like shiny. We use a lot of sequins and beads, and it's more than expected. Everything, we want to have like a feeling of more than expected, that it's just absolutely encrusted with beauty of the things that we get to make.
So you sell things at your studio, you sell things on your website, you get hired by places to make pieces of artwork. How do all the artists that work for you, how do they get paid?
They get paid. So if our core artists are working on a product that's established like the passion flower, mm-hmm. that's minimum wage. So they're hourly workers. And then if they choose to do fine art, they make their fine art, they work at their own pace. Everybody works at their own pace. Nobody is asked to be who they're not, mm-hmm. right? So you make a piece of fine art. When it sells, you get a commission. And then we have design fees if you're illustrations are used in product development, then you get a design fee. And then we also give monthly stipends to people so that we can experiment with their illustrations freely. And then if they land, of course, they get another pay. But we are not within the Medicaid, Medicare system. We're an independent nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So we're uptown Athens, right, where everybody can see us. And we want people to come in and say, hey. And we generate 50% of our operations are through product sales, service, and consulting mm-hmm. on site.
And then the other 50%, is it donations?
Other 50%, man, that is, the generosity of individuals, foundations, and grants. Mm-hmm. And we're always looking, we want to be 100% independent, mm-hmm. and then all the donations become kind of a cushion for more experimentation. But for every dollar that is generated or donated to Passion Works, the social return on investment, which is fascinating to me, there it's described on our website. It was a report created by Ohio University Voinovich Center. For every dollar that's generated or donated, the exchange is for 10. Mm. For every $1 is $10. And our effect on our community and regionally is 8.2 million. And this is social return on investment. Mm. So the social connectivity, and it's a very detailed report. And if you're a data person or you're just kind of curious how the arts and how this kind of connective tissue works and its effect, I really strongly suggest go to our website and check out that report.
How many years has Passion Works Studio been in existence?
26.
26? All right. And are you're planning on 26 more?
I'm laying down this track so the next generation can have a smooth ride. Mm-hmm. That's the dream. Yeah.
Now, your studio also hosts all kinds of events. What can people expect from these events? Do you have space there where you have people come in?
We do have space. We have people rent our space for events. It was the Greyhound bus station in Athens back in the day, and then it was Magic Video, and it's almost like a shotgun room. Mm. It's just real straight, and it's not. What they can expect from 10 until 2:30 weekdays, it is a buzz with activity, and you can see people making and doing and things, and then the rest of the afternoon is, you know, just organizing and having other volunteers come in. We're open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 6, and Sundays from 10 to 4. I don't think you will ever experience a more welcoming space in a public zone. If you walk through past that threshold, you will be invited in by many. And there's lots of volunteer opportunities too.
Yes, the volunteer opportunities. What can people sign up to do? What do they help you with?
Whatever art emergency is in front of us.
An art emergency. I like that. Yeah.
So if it's the month of October, which is a great time to volunteer because we are off site in a very large space, central venue, just a block and a half away, but there's so much room, and that's where we make the big giant puppets. Mm-hmm. And so you'd be making giant puppets or putting beads on things and decorating things. There's a lot of hand sewing, product. We design our product around the workers. So first is our core artists. And so we respond to their abilities and interests and then collect the material stream. And at that intersect is product development. But then we also break it down. So if a volunteer comes in and they have an hour with us, their time can be absolutely productive and purposeful to help build some of the products that we make. So it depends on, you know, somebody's interest and talent and experience and what's at hand.
Yeah. You've mentioned giant puppets twice, so I got to lean into that for just one more minute. So this is a big October event. Tell me more about giant puppets.
Well, Athens is known for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And it has been a celebration since 1972. And back in the day, 30,000 people would be on Court Street. It was, you know, we have more people than in our town population. And it was kind of going feral. And we wanted to love it into its next generation. Mm-hmm. And so we approached Ohio University, Arts for Ohio, and Learning Community. And they sponsored us to do this experiment. And so with first years, we made giant puppets and costumes. And so then we wanted to build a better Halloween. And so the puppets march up and down Court Street to welcome in the block party on Halloween night. And then throughout the year, the puppets may just meander down Court Street because we do that, or it's Valentine's Day and we hand out Valentines, or they show up at the farmer's market, plays. They're invited to lots of different things. And
I love a good multi-purpose puppet. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. And I want to thank you so much for your time. So from passion flowers to giant puppets, you do it all. That was Patty Mitchell, founder and executive director of Passion Works Studio. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk to the newest artist laureate for Ohio State University. That's when Fascinating Ohio from All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. As our smartphones continue to upgrade, people are relying less on professional cameras. But regardless of if your phone has two lenses or three, there is one main difference. Professional photography is an art. And we are here today to talk with Associate Professor of Art, Kate Shannon, who specializes in image-based art. She was recently named Ohio State University's third Artist Laureate. Welcome to All Sides, Kate.
Thank you. This is so exciting.
So first off, congratulations on being Artist Laureate. You were actually even crowned Artist Laureate. I saw a picture of you with putting a crown on your head.
I know.
How did that feel?
Surreal? Yeah, I was really surprised that I am having this opportunity. I had applied. You know, I wrote a proposal and I solicited some letters of recommendation, but I didn't find out until they surprised me during a faculty meeting. And at the last minute, our faculty meeting had been moved onto Zoom, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, I saw some faces pop up that weren't supposed to be there, like our vice provost, and they were there to make the announcement and surprise me. So yeah, it's a great honor, and I was really surprised.
So tell me what an artist laureate is. You know, people have heard of a poet laureate, so tell me about an artist laureate.
Yeah, an artist laureate, as I define it, is a public ambassador for the arts. Mm-hmm. At Ohio State, the position was conceived of as a way to support faculty members in the arts to travel around Ohio and share our work with communities around Ohio, targeting communities that may have less access to the arts.
So what is your plan? I mean, you were crowned very recently.
Yes.
But do you have a plan? What are you going to do with this designation?
Yeah. So I just found out, you're right, very recently. So I'm just starting to make more solid plans about what I want to do and the specific communities that I want to target. But where I'm starting is by connecting with OSU's regional campuses. Mm-hmm. I teach on a regional campus, so the Artist Laureate program itself, it really resonated with me because one of the challenges we have is, you know, if you're a student on the Columbus campus, you have access to a wide variety of cultural opportunities. You know, mm-hmm. there's art everywhere. And sometimes students at Mansfield and from the surrounding areas may not have the same kind of access. And so one of the things that's been really special about teaching on a regional campus is to bring the arts to that community. I co-curate a gallery on our campus with my colleague John Thrasher, and we bring in artists from all around the world. We organize events that elevate the artists that we've connected with in that community. We lead workshops, we show our work around the area. And so I'm looking at the Artist Laureate position as a way to extend some of those activities around the state.
Now, you teach at OSU's Mansfield campus, but does being Artist Laureate mean, are you going to take a step back maybe for a year from teaching to be the Artist Laureate?
So I'm still going to teach, but the position comes with a 50% teaching reduction. So basically, like the classes that I teach will be cut in half. Mm-hmm. So I'll still be going up to Mansfield. I'll still be teaching and connecting with students, but I'll have a little bit more time to travel and do my Artist Laureate thing.
Yeah, and so the award for Artist Laureate is you're going to get funding to be able to travel and do some things, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's the course release and then the funding for travel.
Okay.
Yeah. It travel and materials.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any specific plans of, like, where you would like to go and what you want to do?
Yeah, well, I'm, again, you know, trying to target specific areas, but some ideas of what I want to do. My artwork deals with historical photographs. Mm-hmm. Recently, I've been looking at historic photographs and using digital tools or curatorial strategies to recontextualize those and send a new message. And so my idea is to share some of the artwork that I've done in the communities that I visit, while also sharing relics of early photography, both from my own collection and also those that I discover within the communities that I visit, like historical centers or libraries, things like that. I also am interested in leading hands-on workshops where community members can participate with early 19th century photographic processes to make art. And I'm hoping to create experiences where we can display that art in the community. The goal really is for us to go back into photography's past, learn about its origins, and in doing so, hopefully that'll cause us to be more mindful about the images that we create today in the digital age.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jarovich. We are talking with Kate Shannon, Associate Professor of Art at Ohio State University, who was just named OSU's third Artist Laureate. When did you first start pursuing photography?
So growing up, I always was really fascinated by photographs. For me, the world has always felt loud, busy, overwhelming, and photographs give me this small, static, silent moment, selected moment that I can hold on to and study. Photographs aren't the truth, but they're shadows of the truth that help me poke at larger truths. So when I went to college, I knew that I wanted to, at the very minimum, take a photography course. And mm-hmm. I got lucky, through fate and luck, I landed at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. And the art area at the University of Kentucky at the time was situated in an old tobacco warehouse called the Reynolds Building. And it was off the beaten path, away from the main area of campus, near the railroad tracks. As students, we had 24-hour access. We could do whatever we wanted in the building. We had our own studios. I had an amazing set of professors. And the environment gave me this sense of freedom to create, to question, to collaborate. And it made me want to be an artist for the rest of my life. It made me want to be a student for the rest of my life. So I kept doing that. And when I couldn't be a student anymore, I naturally fell into teaching. And in the classroom, I really try to create the same sense of excitement and freedom that I felt as a student at UK.
Do you have a favorite type of camera you use? Do you just use all kinds of different things? Do you have like one? This is my special camera.
You know, I really don't have one special camera. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big gear person. And I always tell my students, I think the best camera is the one you have with you. Mm-hmm. So I have like professional gear that I use, in certain situations. But 90% of the time, I'm using my phone.
So you don't hate the phone camera.
No, I really don't. And I think that if we exclude those tools that we do have access to as tools that we can use to make art, mm-hmm. that's leaving out a lot of people, you know. Mm-hmm. So I try to stress to my students that it's not about the equipment. Mm-hmm. It's about your vision and how you can bring that forth. You know, sometimes the equipment helps. Mm-hmm. But I've seen, my students do amazing things with just their phones.
When I was looking through some of your photos on your professional website, they weren't traditional photos that maybe, someone would be used to seeing. They're very artistic, very unique. In some of them, you tend to take away the background and just focus on the person at the center of the image, which made it very bold, very eye-catching. Can you tell me about your style of photography?
Yeah. So instead of working like a traditional photographer with my camera around my neck, going around trying to find interesting things to photograph, I've experimented with that kind of making. But more often what I do is I start with a photograph that already exists. Mm-hmm. Often it'll be a historic photograph, maybe a photograph from the media. And then I use digital tools to kind of dig into that photograph. Sometimes I'll remove the backgrounds, like you said. Sometimes I'll animate aspects of the image. And it's really me working to study the image instead of becoming the thing itself. You know, the result is a site for my further exploration and invention. So that's typically the way I work.
And some of your photos seemed animated with the way the colors popped. Do you use animation? You mentioned you use digital. Is that a part of it too?
Yeah, I have experimented with animation. You know, it's not something that I think I do necessarily very well. But for example, there was a series that I created called Construction Destruction, and it dealt with these amazing glass plate negatives that I discovered on the Library of Congress's website that were taken by the Wright brothers to document their flying machines. And the Wright brothers were really secretive about their flying machines machine experiments. And they didn't make many prints from their glass plate negatives. They just kind of kept the negatives. Well, eventually they were stored on their family's property in Dayton. And in 1913, here comes the Great Dayton Flood, which is like the greatest natural disaster in Ohio's history. And their negatives were submerged in water for several days. And because of that, what we end up with, their negatives have marks and tears where the photographic emulsion began to tear away. And I was looking at these objects just like as these amazing relics of the past, these physical relics of the past. The disaster became part of the story of the image. And it made me think about how today the images we create are not bound to the physical world in the same way. So anyway, for that series, what I did is I took those digital negatives and I isolated the mistakes and the cracks and the crumbles of the emulsion, and I animated the flying machines behind the wear and the tear as just a sort of conceptual exploration between the physical image and then my ability as a digital artist to precisely repeat and repair information.
I love the way you describe things.
Oh, thank you.
Your students must love you.
I take that as a compliment. I feel like talking is not my strong suit. So
you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Tell me about teaching your students. You know, you just mentioned that you don't hate the phone that's a part the camera that's a part of a phone. You know, you take pictures with what you have to work with. What's your favorite thing to teach students?
Recently, I've been really excited about showing my students photographic processes from the past. I've been teaching an introductory photography course at Ohio State for 20 years. This will be my 20th year in the autumn. When I started in 2005 as a graduate student, I was teaching a film class, and my students didn't have camera phones in their pockets. And, you know, social media hadn't exploded yet. Of course, AI wasn't a thing at all. And well, that we knew of, at least.
Yeah.
And now, you know, their relationship to photography has dramatically changed. And I find that as they become more detached from the physical ways of making, the more interested they are in learning about them. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do in my classes is, you know, in the first week of class, we'll create shoebox camera obscuras, and I'll take them into a room size camera obscura. And I'm telling you, when they walk in, you know, I show these students like things I think are amazing, like the stuff of science fiction. I used to watch Star Trek when I was little, and like, this stuff is amazing, like generative AI or 3D printing. And they're curious, but they seem a little underwhelmed. But when I show them a physical process, or when I take them into a camera obscura room, they audibly gasp. And I think that's really cool.
What's a camera obscura room?
Oh, so it's literally just this room on campus that wasn't being used. And a former photography professor we had at Mansfield named Jeff Sprang converted it into a room size camera obscura, which is just literally a dark room with a hole. So there's a, you know, the window is covered and there's a hole in the window letting light in. And it projects an upside down reverse image of the world outside on the wall. And so the students go in there, we stand in there, and I tell them, like, this is what's happening inside our phones, just on a smaller scale. Like, we are literally standing inside of a camera. And so by having that physical experience together in time and space, I think that it makes them become more aware of, more familiar with what's actually going on with this tool that they use every day almost instinctively.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Well, we only have about a minute left, but do you you said that you exhibit your work. Do you sell your work too?
You know, I really don't sell a lot of work. I'm not opposed to it, but the goal for me in making work is more to communicate ideas and less about making something beautiful. You know, you would necessarily like hang up on your wall. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm not opposed to it. If anyone wants to, you know, throw some money at me, I'll gladly take it. But yeah, it's just not the focus for me.
And so your reign as Artist Laureate, has it started now, or is this something that starts with the fall when school comes back in the fall?
My appointment starts in July. So I'm busy making those plans now.
Yeah. And so do you have the first place that you're going to travel to lined up yet?
Not yet. Okay. We're working on it. I just started some conversations with deans at the regional campuses, and I'm working with Lisa Florman to and the past Artist Laureates as well. This is the third year, so I'm connecting with them and getting some ideas with them as well.
Yeah, well, I want to wish you good luck, and I want have so much fun being Artist Laureate. And there's a great picture of you wearing a crown. So are you going to wear the crown around too?
You know, I think I should, right?
You should. Yeah, I expected you to have the crown on today.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. Thank you to Kate Shannon, Associate Professor of Art at Ohio State University, who was just named OSU's third Artist Laureate. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And this is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.